out there to everyone in podcast land, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like movies, right here on NPR Illinois. And in this episode here, a full disclosure where we take the biggest movie releases and spoil the ever-living hell out of them. I'm Jeremy Gechner, the editor-in-chief of the Front Row Network, and here joining me, the associate editor-in-chief of the Front Row Network, Mr. Craig McFarlane. We got a little Illuminati section going on here, man.
The original A-team.
That's right.
Although I will say that Brett mentioned he's glad that we get Lion King on Beyond the Mouse, because really we should also have Spider-Man. We should also have Endgame.
Hey.
We should also have Star Wars, because Beyond the Mouse is really the reason why all of these movies exist.
So if we did the Disney rule, every movie would be Beyond the Mouse. So
and the Beyond the Mouse folks wouldn't have a problem with that.
Yeah,
so
they wouldn't.
Make sure to listen to our individual feed. I'm going to plug it right at the beginning.
That's
right. Subscribe to Beyond the Mouse, which is now on Spotify, TuneIn, and also iHeartRadio.
Yes.
So you can find us on all those platforms as well.
Nice. Well, now that Craig has plugged his individual show there, we are here talking about the latest in the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Spider-Man Far From Home. This is apparently the end of Phase 4, if you want to be, or Phase 3, if you want to believe Kevin Feige. Man, he's never really given us a reason not to. But before we dive into anything Spider-Man, again, we have to give you the first warning here. On full disclosure, if you've never listened to us, we treat this movie as if you were right there watching it with us. So we talk full spoilers here. We do not leave anything to chance. So if you have not seen Spider-Man Far From Home yet, and come on, we got to make a $1 billion so Marvel gets it back. If you haven't seen it yet, bookmark this podcast, come back to it, and then you will be here for all the breakdown. But that's it. You've been warned. Spoilers start in 3, 2, 1. Man. It just really just did away with Mysterio there.
Well, I think what I'm going to do, Jeremy, is I'm going to act like I hated this movie for half of the podcast.
There you go.
And then halfway through the podcast, everything is going to fade away, and I will tell my love and share my great joy of this film. No, it was really cool because obviously I know Mysterio from the comics. I know him from the animated TV shows. I know him from just Spider-Man lore. And it was kind of cool. You know, the marketing leading up to this was like trying to play him off as though he was going to be a good guy. We all knew there was no way that Mysterio was going to be a good guy. But then there was like a second halfway through that movie where I was going, man, they've really changed the character of Mysterio. I don't know if I like this direction, because it does seem like he's much more virtuous and heroic. Like, when is he going to start? Like, when is the illusion going to come in? When is that going to happen? And it just so happened that, like, the second I thought that was when they were walking into the bar together.
Yeah.
And so, like, to me, it was just such a well-placed turn, and in a way where even me as a hardcore comic book fan, now granted, again, I knew he had to be the big bad in this movie the whole way through, but if you're someone that doesn't know Mysterio or doesn't necessarily follow along with these things like us geeks do, I can imagine that that was a really big turn for you. And even for me, it was cool. It was really neat how they resolved that. And I know that you were really impressed with the tech that they used.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head when it comes to Mysterio. Look, anybody who reads comic books, you know that this is one of the more famous Spider-Man villains. And so you're right. When the marketing is going around with this, you know, actually he's a good guy from another dimension. You know, he was a hero there. He's come here. You know, it plays on our desire to have something like that. And it really is great that they got somebody as likable as Jake Gyllenhaal to play that. Because you're right. Even for the hardcore comic cynic, you just can't help but kind of be taken in by the performance a little bit, especially as it relates to a suddenly self-doubting Peter Parker. And that's really kind of the best part of the movie, the early part of the movie there, when those two interact with each other. But obviously the turn happens, and I'll talk in a second about why I like the turn the way they did it more than probably anything else. And I think the key with Mysterio is making sure that the magic, the supposed magic, the effects, so to speak, because special effects are his power. And you have to make sure that those are something we've never seen before, but also something that is, you know, just blow you away. And I was absolutely blown away by how they did Mysterio's quote unquote powers in this movie. You know, I think that the sequence in the warehouse is just so pitch perfect, shows you why this person is a real threat, even though their illusions aren't necessarily real. And, you know, like, and just the way that it also plays psychological games with Peter, it wasn't just a simple, oh, this is here, but this isn't. And, you know, you can't tell where you are. It's playing on Peter's insecurities. It's playing on his, just his self-doubt that he is having, and synthesizing that with everything is just a fantastic way to take this character. And, you know, the thing that I liked the most about Mysterio in this, though, is, you know, obviously Tony Stark looms so large over this movie, as well he should. You know, the world is saved because of Iron Man, and, you know, obviously with the connection that he had with Peter. But in this movie, I love that we get two, once again, we get the complexity of the character of Tony Stark, because while he had a profoundly positive impact on Peter's life, Tony didn't always have a positive impact on the people around him. And, you know, Happy Hogan gets a great line about that, how he was my best friend, but he was constantly doubting himself. He was a wreck. And, you know, we see in turning Mysterio into a begrudging former Stark employee that feels like, you know, the keys to the Stark kingdom shouldn't go to this teenage kid from Queens. You know, like that, I think, is a fantastic way to take this character and to show you it's not just a mwahahahaha, evil and I can do something. It gives him a sort of righteousness. You know, he thinks he's doing what's best for not only Edith, the technology, but for the world. And I think that that's a key part of why this movie works.
Yeah, he wants to be the best. He wants to be the most famous superhero ever. And I think that there is some virtue in that. And there's some, he's wanting to show that, you know, Tony Stark may be revered as a god among men, but really, it was the team behind him that made him what he was. And so yeah, he wants to expose that. I do want to go back just a second to the very beginning of the film, because I do think it's really interesting, being a Captain America fan, that in the newsreel that you see at the high school, you see Tony Stark, you see Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, but you also see Captain America. And I guess I didn't put that together in my mind that the world didn't see what our audience saw in Endgame. They didn't see Captain America going back. So he, obviously what he wanted was for people to think that he was gone, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I don't know. They didn't really dig deep in that story. They just showed his picture and said that he'll be missed. But, you know, that's really interesting. And I think it's just something that, is unique to this film that you see that.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned the way that this film starts. Oh man. You see, like, the best part of Spider-Man Homecoming and the best part about this version of Spider-Man is kind of the irreverentness, right? Because he is a teenage kid, and a teenager wouldn't take things as seriously as we do, says the, you know, fantasy comic book fan at 32. But, the way, like, you know, you have this serious opener scene, which I suspect was what an end credit of Endgame would be. I suspect mm-hmm. that what the plan would have been for that. Cause that didn't that feel like an end credit scene?
It sure did.
Like, especially the way he does the magic right at the screen and stuff.
I believe that is the, scene that was added. That was the end credit scene that
You're
was
right.
added
yes.
for the people, for the re-release of Endgame, which by the way, we're only $16 million away from Avatar.
Come on,
maybe we all should go pony up and go see Endgame one more time.
That's only like 6 million people seeing it, guys. Come on. We can make this happen. In the world. I mean, come on. There's like what? 8 billion. Come on. But the, you know, I love that the way this movie starts is once again, just with that high school irreverentness. It's just like, you know, they put the music to I Will Always Love You. I mean, come on, man. Like when that music starts, Sarah and I are just sitting in the theater thinking like, what the hell is happening right now? And to turn it into there. And just as a graphic designer, when they have that picture of the camera, candles at the end of it has the Getty Images watermark over it. Cause mm-hmm. you know, like a kid wouldn't notice that. But again, also just, you know, we come out of Endgame with all this heavy drama and all of this intense, very meaningful action. And, you know, the way they explain to us what happened to all these people, because this is exactly what Sarah said when she saw Endgame. You know, well, what about all those people that just came back all of a sudden? You know, you were gone for 5 years. You know, people move on and lives go on. And I think that the way they did that, just explaining it in that newsreel, is just perfect and pitch perfect for the way they've done Spider-Man in the MCU. And then just launching right into the story angle itself. I don't know how you felt about that, but I just think this movie opens perfectly.
Yeah, no, it's a great way, and it explains, you know, what people on the ground, we're always in the meta world, we are calling it the snap and they're calling it the blip. And it's just really interesting to kind of start to build that world back, and some of the problems that came along with it, like the little scrawny kid that now is after Peter's girl, you know, it's really an interesting dichotomy to add. And it was something that we knew that they would have to do. We all assumed that they had all been snapped or now blipped. And that was the case. And so we got to see that a little bit too, even at the basketball game. You got that, to see that sort was of that just happening.
The best of all time, the band reappearing on the basketball court.
Yeah.
But again, well, you see, like, and again, Marvel just knows how to do this stuff, because those were conversations that were dead serious online after Endgame. You know, like, well, what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And then they just turn it into a hilarious joke and also give you logic with it. So it's just like, okay, everybody just, you know, calm down a bit. We can still have some fun in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And just like the band in the basketball game, we just had someone blip in to this conversation. So just out of nowhere, can you introduce yourself, sir? I think you've been gone for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I have no idea who you are.
You look the same.
I have been gone for 5 years. Yeah, I just got snapped back into existence. My name's Connor Maloney. I think I was on the podcast one time. I think a couple years ago, 5 years ago, I remember.
5 years ago, yes. Very
just,
good.
Just before Endgame came out.
Just before. I remember all getting hyped about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think I totally agree with you, Jeremy. It was just a great way to start up the film. And I think getting us right off into Europe. So take it away, good sir.
Yeah, so obviously the plot of this movie centers around Peter and his class trip to Europe. I believe they're going to Italy and to France, I think is the main crux of where they're supposed to be going. But of course, that gets a little hijacked. But in this, we find kind of, you know, what is it about second Spider-Man movies where they just go straight for the I'm doubting myself as a hero thing? You know, happened in Spider-Man 2. Happens in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, and now happens in Spider-Man Far From Home. Although I will say, I think this one's far more organic, because what basically the big crux of the movie, especially when it comes to Peter Parker's storyline, is his self-doubt about trying to live up to the legacy of Iron Man, and trying to, as the world puts it, be the next Iron Man. And I just thought that was a really, really cool way to take the ever-present self-doubt storyline of Peter Parker. Of course, there's always that famous comic book image of him putting the suit in the trash can and walking away, Spider-Man no more. And I just thought that the way that they let Holland play off of that kind of dynamic is really, really good in this movie, and just wanting to be a kid. And I just think that's something that's been woefully missing from Spider-Man movies so far. Connor, what did you think of that dynamic with Peter's self-doubt in this movie?
Well, I honestly like the whole, should I live up to Iron Man's, I guess, motive, I guess, of just being the hero. But in all honesty, I don't like the whole, will I be the next Iron Man? Are you going to step up and be the next Iron Man? Because in all honesty, Spider-Man, I feel, is his own character. And I just feel like if they were to say, oh, he's going to be the next Iron Man, I feel like that they're just kind of set up what we already had. And I don't know. I feel like that if they did that, it would just feel like they were reusing the same thing. So I feel like if they did a different direction with Spider-Man, like he's going to be his own character. He's going to be his own Spider-Man. And I guess not try to impress people anymore. He's going to step up and be Spider-Man, not the next Iron Man, in my opinion. But I did love it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I always took it more as a metaphorical version of that. The world needs a new hero to lead us, so to speak, to keep us safe, that we can look up to. And obviously Nick Fury, who might not be Nick Fury, we'll talk about that in a little bit, is pushing him in a certain direction. And, you know, the crux of that is, you know, Peter doesn't feel like he can be what Tony was. Craig, I know that you mentioned to me in our chatting offline that you also feel like Tony Stark is just so prevalent throughout the whole of this movie. How do you think this dynamic with Peter and Tony, dead Tony in this sense, worked throughout the film?
There's a line that they put in the trailer that I wish that they didn't, because it didn't have the impact that it did. It would have had it not been in the trailer. And it's a funny line, you know, it's when Fury grabs him in Europe and he says, well, no, I can't do this. I'm just the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And then Fury comes back with, you've been to space, bitch. But at the same time, I really like that, because in this whole concept of what are the Avengers, who are the Avengers, who are you going to be? He shows up at a charity auction in the Iron Spider suit.
Yeah.
People are berating him to say, you know, what are you, are you going to be the next Iron Man? Whatever the case may be. There's just this incredible burden being put on a high school sophomore. And yeah. So I think that that's why I really enjoyed that line about, oh no, I'm just the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, because that's really what he wants to be. It's what he's always wanted to be. Let me backtrack there, because he did want to be an Avenger, but I think that once that finally happened, he realized that he needs to be a high school student first. It's really interesting. It's just a good dichotomy. And again, it goes for laughs, and it's a funny line from Skrull Fury, but I don't know. I almost wish that they wouldn't have included that in the marketing materials beforehand, because I do think that it explains Holland's position a little bit better.
Yeah,
that's all.
Definitely. And, I love that throughout this movie, you keep seeing like murals and pictures of Tony Stark in every place around the world. And even in the ridiculous opening montage sequence, I don't know about you, man, but when I was seeing like all those people we lost, I mean, I got a little, even though I'm, you know, listening to Whitney Houston sing about it, all of a sudden I was just like, oh my God, yeah, these guys are gone now. And that really, really sucks. But again, though, like you're right, an interesting way that Peter is now defining himself in this, and that he just does want to be a kid. He wants to, you know, just be able to kind of leave the hero persona behind for a little bit and just, you know, tell the girl that he loves or that he likes, MJ, that he likes her. And I love that they use that. I love that they weren't like, you know, the girl I love. They keep it so in the high school terms, you know, like the girl I like, you know, and they're not playing.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, exactly. But that's a key thing that you're right, Connor. You're closer in age to what Peter is supposed to be there. So did you find this pretty relatable as well?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, whenever that Craig said so much stress being put on a high school sophomore, I felt that. I felt that a lot. But I definitely connected with it. Like I mean, I felt, obviously I'm not like a Spider-Man type where I hide stuff from people and I have to keep secrets to protect people. But I did feel like the whole idea of a high school student getting a bunch of, I guess, stress being put on him from all these responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And I understood that, and I got what they were going for with that. So I did relate to it 100%.
Yeah,
and I like that.
And I mean, like, you know, no mention of the trip to Europe is complete without the man in the chair, Ned, played by the amazing Jacob Batalon. Tell you, man, this stuff was hilarious to me. And, you know, some of the criticisms of the movie have been that the first half of it is a little bit slow in some people's estimation, but I didn't get that at all, because I think this stuff is really hilarious. I love that he and Betty are, you know, only vacation boyfriend and girlfriend. girlfriend. They're calling each other babe every time they see each other. I just thought this was really, really clever stuff. And they really give Martin Starr, the teacher, and the other, I can't remember the actor's name, the African-American actor, but like they give both of them some great moments to shine and just like that typical teacher awkwardness. I mean, Craig, what did you think of the supporting cast and such here with the rest of the high schoolers?
Absolutely. I mean, I really enjoyed the first, and I love Flash too. You know, I mean,
they did great in this movie.
I really liked the first part of that movie because Homecoming definitely had more of a John Hughes feel all the way throughout. This movie, I think about halfway through, it lost that a little bit, and we had to make sure that we went into, you know, more of a superhero type movie. But the first act of this movie, I really enjoyed, and I didn't think it was too slow at all. I mean, listening back to our spoiler-free reaction from Lou, he mentioned that that was one of the favorite parts of the movie for him because it really set the tone of this still being that high school drama playing out in front of us. And I totally agree with that. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, maybe they could have cut 5 minutes out here and there. I don't know what they would have cut, though, you know, because you really aren't too long into the movie before Mysterio starts fighting a water elemental. And I mean, at what point do you cut that? Right. So, I think that the people that are looking to gripe about the film would gripe about the first hour of the movie, but truly you get a lot of really good character development in that hour. And if they're truly going to, if Sony is going to take this kid back, and he needs to stand alone as his own franchise, then you need those side characters to be really developed. And this movie did a very good job of not just having Zendaya and Tom Holland, but it also had Ned, it had Flash, it had Betty, it had the teachers, it had, you know, there's so many other supporting characters that could just go right into a new direction, new franchise for them. Should Sony decide they don't like that Marvel money.
Yeah, don't do it, Sony. Well, you mentioned Mysterio, and of course, we talked about that before. But Connor, since you blipped in here, obviously, once the action gets going, Mysterio, Quentin Beck, he's from another universe. I love that they call out the 616 universe with the universe from the comic books. That's a really nice little Easter egg for all of us comic book nerds. But what did you think of Mysterio and the way his character unfolds? What did you think of you know, the diversion from the comic books to make him a Stark employee? What did you think of the way his powers were shown on screen? What did you think of Jake Gyllenhaal's performance overall?
Well, that's what I was about to say. First of all, Jake Gyllenhaal, I mean, I gotta give it up for that guy. Like, he did amazing in that. And I loved Mysterio. I loved the arc on here that he had. I guess, I don't know if that's the right word to use, but I just loved the way that they used him. Like, you thought that you could trust him, but obviously he's Mysterio, and he's, so it's kind of hard to trust him, but I guess, I don't know, it just feels like, I think that everybody had a speculation, but they wanted to trust it. They were like, okay, I'll give it a try. I'll think of it as, okay, Quentin Beck is is the real good guy here. And then right whenever the bar scene happened and all of the, like, the illusions all happened and they all just went down, and he started doing that little laugh. I think that everybody was a tiny bit shocked. They're like, oh my God, I trusted it. But in the back of their minds, they were all like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, if you're a Marvel fan, you should know, obviously, not to trust that guy.
And I mean, I mentioned that too. It's just like, I know, you know, we realize they have to do a swerve on him. He is a villainous character, but I appreciated two really good things about that, which is, one, I love that they gave him a team of people that were supporting him. I don't know why, but that just sort of made it more believable to me, you know, that there would just be all of these disgruntled employees from Tony Stark that would, you know, band together to try and take his tech back now that he's gone. But also, every time I see a superhero film, I always think of the quote. I think it's from I think it's from an X-Men comic book, but where they said that, you know, every villain is the hero of their own story. And, you know, like you think about it, you know, the best villains are the ones that think they are doing the right thing, and that have this zero sum game of, you know, the ends will justify the means. And, you know, that's definitely Quentin Beck to a T in this, but making him, you know, think he's doing the right thing by reclaiming this tech that's too powerful for a teenager in his estimation. You know, he thinks that he's doing the thing that needs to be done for the world. And, you know, we'll obviously get into the political ramifications of his final statement and such. But, Connor, what did you think of the way his powers manifested, especially in that warehouse scene, you know, where he's attacking Peter Parker?
Well, I think that it was kind of, there was one thing that was bugging me the entire time. It was that whenever he was fighting Peter, how did he know that Peter was going to be in those exact movements that he did? That's one thing that kind of bugged me, because like his illusions couldn't predict if he was going to go right or left, or if he's going to throw a right hook rather than a left hook or something like that. I did love it. The illusions and stuff, you know, dead Iron Man coming back from the grave, that thing. And then all of the Spider, that was honestly, I love that. And then the Spider-Man, a bunch of them piling onto Peter, and, a bunch of Mysterios in an army, that the illusions and the special effects work. I mean, well done to them. That was like, that was some 10 out of 10 stuff right there. But the one plot hole that everybody says is, how did he know that Peter was going to be, I guess, in those movements? And even though I'll put that to the side just because of how amazing it looked, but it is in the back of my head though.
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, like, I think that the illusions are pretty full blown there, and that you just kind of some kind of adjustment on the fly type thing of whatever Quentin wants to think about and do there. You know, I would assume it's some kind of cognitive function of the illusions in the drone, so to speak.
And I mean, that's pretty much canon in the comic books. You know, Mysterio builds these worlds or these mazes or fun houses for Peter to get trapped in. It all adapts to whatever decisions Peter ends up making, which is what's terrifying about it, because then that's why you can't determine whether it's reality or not. And so that's I understand the gripe, but at the same time, I think that on some level, this is still a comic book movie. And
on some level.
We have comics that kind of reinforce that this guy's got some pretty crazy powers. But the use of drones kind of brings it more into the real life side of things. So I understand too, where, because there are these really elaborate, I mean, I host all the Disney shows, and Disney is doing all these super elaborate drone shows, and people are doing fireworks displays out of drones now. And, I think you'll see more and more of that as we go along. And so to incorporate that real life tech into the illusions, I think makes it almost more believable that this, that something like this could happen, obviously in this fantastical, superhero environment. But, so I understand the gripe, but I do think that there is some precedent and canon in the comics for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the fact that they use drones too, because Mysterio in the comic books is mostly a cerebral supervillain. You know, like he's really using his illusions to mess with your mind and to try and trick you in that way. And
lots by of smoke giving, and mirrors.
Yes. Yeah. And by giving him the drone aside of this, it gives him a physical threat. It makes him more of a physical threat. Because that was obviously my thing. It's like, okay, well, if they're going the route that Mysterio always goes here, how is their actual damage being done? And I thought that they masked that just insanely well. But of course, you know, Mysterio, once he reveals the elementals aren't real, you know, and Peter gets owned in that warehouse and hit by a freaking train. You know, I really loved the scene on the plane with Happy Hogan. You know, obviously it's the most emotional scene in the movie. But again, just so much rich building of characters that we no longer have. You know, Happy's speech about how Tony was a wreck and always doubting himself. You know, Peter, you know, talking about how much he misses him. And what I think is probably the line of the trailer, and I know that it was in, or the line of the movie, and I know that it was in the trailer, but when Happy looks at him and says, you know, I don't think Tony would have done what he did if he didn't know you would be here, or if he didn't know that you would be here afterward. Just the sense sense of that. And then to see Peter, you know, pick up Tony's tech and start designing in much the same way that Tony did, and the look on Happy Hogan's face, you know, basically Jon Favreau in that scene is all of us in the theater, just brimming with pride that, you know, our boy, so to speak, is finally kind of doing what Tony would have done. And, you know, like, so he doesn't have to live up to Tony, but he can still embody the best of what Tony represented. What did you guys think of this scene? Craig, let's start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, we talked about these are characters that have been with us for a long time. And I love the combination of Tom Holland and Jon Favreau. Whenever they're on screen together, it just works. And I'm really glad that Happy Hogan is going to be, again, depending on Sony's decision to keep this in the MCU or not. But I'm glad that he is a character that's going to continue on. And hopefully, you know, I'm sure he would love to continue on as that character with kind of being this mentor, almost Alfred type to a young Peter Parker. But no, I really enjoyed that. This is a fun summer movie. It's a vacation road trip movie. Mm-hmm. It's a teen movie, but then right in the middle of it, they put in these little bits of emotion. And for the fans in particular that have followed this thing for over 21, 22 movies at this point, it allows us to be able to take a moment and think, oh yeah, there's been some changes to our field here. And I really did enjoy that scene quite a bit. And I really enjoyed the stuff with MJ. I mean, not to jump into that, but, you know, when Zendaya was cast, I think that we had the new show back then, and I was like, ah, I don't know about any of this, but but I love her version of MJ because it's nothing like any other version of MJ we've seen before. I just really appreciate that. I like that, you know, she's not just the flirty redhead girl, and I love that she has some dimension to her. She loves, like, anything that I knew so many of those types of girls in high school that were just like into darkness and death and despair because, you know, you have to be emotional when you're in high school. And, sorry, Connor,
but I can confirm that.
But, you know, I just loved all of that. And I loved the interactions and kind of the true heartbreak that you see in Tom Holland's face when he was like, well, weren't you following me around because you liked me? And he was like, well, no, she was like, I knew you were, I knew you were Spider-Man. So I enjoyed her performance as well. And, haters be damned. I think Zendaya plays a really good MJ, and I'm glad that I'm glad that they did that reveal at the end of Homecoming. And obviously it came to fruition here that she is our Mary Jane throughout.
Yeah, and definitely also the scene where they decide to go out and take a walk together, I think, is just absolutely adorable and so amazingly well shot. Just, you know, where she cuts him off and says yes before he even asks and stuff. Like, it's just that awkwardness of there. Connor, if you haven't found out yet, I'm sure you will. What did you think of these? What we just talked about there of MJ, of the airplane scene? What did you think?
Well, I'll start with the airplane scene. So, with Happy Hogan and Peter Parker, I love the dynamic between them that kind of shifted from to where Happy was like, I don't know about this kid. He's just a kid. He's just Spider-Man. I don't know about this guy. I don't have time for him. Hangs up. Now that he knows, oh, Tony died, and now he trusts Peter with his tech and everything, with the world basically in his hands. Who am I to doubt that? I will trust him, and I will be his, not mentor, but I'll be his, like you said, Alfred type of person. So I love the way that those two grew together and their relationship as like friends, I guess, kind of grew together. Yeah. And I love that so much. And I think that was perfect, the way that it just worked out. Because I think that the way that you really see this is at the end of Endgame at Tony's funeral, where Happy is talking to Morgan Stark and is like, hey, you want something to eat?
No,
and
don't do cheeseburgers, man. No, I can't take it.
And he says cheeseburgers, yeah. And then I guess that that's never realized that the people that Tony left behind are the people that he should trust the most, I feel. And that, in my opinion, is probably the my favorite thing about Happy Hogan. And because at first I didn't really mind his character that much. I was like, eh, okay, another side character like Maria Hill or whatever.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, oh, my God, this guy is actually hilarious. And also he's also really good. He's a really good character. And so that was my thoughts on the airplane scene. And of course, the emotional part, you know, with Peter and breaking down and all that about Tony and stuff. I feel that Tony's death brought them together rather than apart. So that was my thoughts on the airplane scene. And then for MJ, I would say I would agree with you guys and say that this is probably one of my favorite MJs because I don't have complaints about the Tobey Maguire one because I love Tobey Maguire movies. I love them, the Spider-Man ones. But then again, Zendaya performs so much differently than you would expect, like the other Mary Jane did in the other ones. Because
Kirsten Dunst, young man.
Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, I forgot her name there.
I couldn't tell.
Made a terribly good impression on you, clearly.
Go back and watch Interview with a Vampire.
Right. Yeah, pretty good performance.
Yeah,
and also I love Zendaya too. Like I started noticing her. I watched The Greatest Showman, and I was like, oh my God, I love Zendaya. So then I saw her in Spider-Man. I was like, oh my God, I know her. And I watched it. And I watched it. I realized, oh my God, this is actually amazing. She's a great actress, and then she performed so great to be a different type of MJ. And I feel like it's definitely more of a high school. As Cray said, it's more of a high school type girl. She's not all about love and all flirty and stuff. She's about like the dark stuff. But yeah, I love that though. That's my thoughts on that though.
Absolutely. Well, obviously being a superhero film, it's only as good as its third act, some would say. So what did you guys think of the ultimate final battle here with Mysterio? You know, the drones are going for this huge attack on London. Peter has to go and take all of them down individually. I think, you know, it's hard to... Man, it's just really hard to follow Endgame in this regard. I mean, you have literally one of the most insane, amazing, visually stunning battles I think the movie industry will ever see. And then, you know, okay, go on, Spider-Man, do your thing. But I will give it this. I love that they kind of used it as a way to show him kind of fully once again finding out how powerful he can be in a way, you know, like the fact that he goes into the illusion and he's using his webs in ways that we haven't seen him before, and especially the use of the Spidey sense or the Peter Tingle, as we're calling it in this movie. But I just like that that's like, you know, they used it kind of as a way to further his character as opposed to like, oh man, look at how insane these visuals are, even though they are good visuals, you know. But, you know, it's just when you come off of Endgame, you're just like, oh well, okay, I guess it was all right. Did you guys have the same reaction there?
I mean, I enjoyed the final battle. I think it's really funny, and you know, laugh at me if you will, but the battles to me are just not what I'm there for. I'm there for call me fanboy through and through. I'm there for the stories. I'm there for relationships. I'm there for everything else. But yeah, I think trying to live up to anything that Endgame provided up against any battle, that's going to look
impossible.
Yeah, it's going to look tough. Even going back and watching the Avengers 1 battle is never going to look the same necessarily because of Endgame. But I enjoyed the interaction even at the end of the battle between Jake Gyllenhaal and Tom Holland. And particularly, I mean, Mysterio is giving us our end credit scene there. And he's doing something that seemingly it's almost like he's giving up to a point. And we don't know why. And then it's later revealed. It's his last great illusion, right? So, I mean, it's just such a good job of developing that character through and through. But in seeing them fight drones, these are the types of villains we probably need for a while after Endgame because, because we can't have those huge world builders and just this immense crises of impossible proportions. And so I like it. I like it quite a bit. And, you know, the reveal, going back to that scene that I love with Fury explaining to him that he's the one that's got to do this. He's talking about Captain Marvel and he's talking about the other Avengers and it's got to be you. Knowing that in the end credit scene, we find out that that's a Skrull. It's really Fury communicating from a spaceship because there's probably some other impending thing coming.
Oh yeah. We're going to get into that, man.
And he's saying, hey, Spidey, this is all for you. So, but Jeremy, I know that you were into the tech. I know you were into the drones in particular, and kind of how they built that world and built that illusion, but how did you feel about the final battle?
Yeah, I mean, I was fine with it. You know, and like I said, I like that, you know, they used it as a way to show off Spider-Man's powers more, you know, mm-hmm. because, you know, Homecoming was amazing. But even his appearances in Infinity War and in Endgame, you know, we didn't really get to see a lot of like the agile Spider-Man. You know, we got to see a lot of Tony's Iron Spider suit. We got to see, obviously, a lot of his basic powers in Spider-Man Homecoming. But this one really showed, you know, how, you know, Spider-Man as a character can be so powerful because he does have that Spidey sense, because he can kind of, you know, predict what is coming at him, but also just that flexibility and the quickness about Spider-Man. And I think that's always what made him such a great character on the comic book page. So, you know, it's a standard battle, for, so to speak, but you're right, obviously, with the end credit scene, which we'll talk about in a second, that final interaction with Mysterio is so, so good, especially his quote-unquote final line of, you know, the people will believe anything, loaded for many, many reasons there. But Connor, let's get your thoughts real quick before we dive into post-credits on the final battle here.
The final battle was honestly, obviously, it was meant to be kind of hard to follow on some occasions, but it was also supposed to look really good. And I loved it because it was, once again, it's a Marvel movie, and you know it because there's a big disposable CGI army to fight.
You are correct, sir.
Yeah, I thought that the whole interaction with Mysterio and Spider-Man was awesome because, like, I love the last fake-out because, call me gullible, but I love the last fake-out that they have with Mysterio pretending like he was on the ground, but then it showed him, like, with the, or it showed, like, with the gun. I'm not sure if that was him or not with the gun, but that was... Okay, I had a mind blank for a second, but I did remember that whenever they shot the gun, then it fired back at him, and then he died, and I just love how he tried to do one last fake out just to see if this will work. It was my last shot, and Peter was brave enough to see it and stopped it, and actually, well, I guess essentially became the hero that he was wanting to be the entire movie. He was able to stop that entire thing and quote unquote save his friends, which he kind of did. And it was, I just loved the way it looked and the fact that he was able to do that at one point running out of webs, and he did run out of webs, I think. Yeah. And just the fact he was able to pull that off, it just, it was amazing. And although the thing is though, anybody could, you could fake being dead, which this is a whole theory I probably shouldn't get into, but Sinister Six, possibly. I don't know. Maybe it
might be out there. Well, before we get to post credits, absolutely loved how they did the quote unquote love fulfilled scene with MJ. You know, I love that it doesn't look like some cinematic kiss. You know, like it's literally just an awkward teenager kiss, and you know they don't know how to walk away from it. They just keep looking back at each other, and it's absolutely pitch perfect. Again, and I don't think John Watts, the director, gets enough credit for that. Like, he is so in tune with what this version of Spider-Man is. But look, people, Marvel movie end credits, end of phase 3, apparently. So we've got a lot to talk about here. But so let's dive into the first one here, which is, I just love that. I don't know why, but I love that when they're doing like him swinging with MJ, they literally give you MJ's perspective. And every time I see the Tobey Maguire movies, I think the same thing. I was just like, no. It wouldn't be some like floaty, fun little, oh my gosh. It would be exactly what this is, which is terrifying. And I absolutely love that they did that. that with them. But the big, obviously, reveal here is the reintroduction of J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson. How in the hell did they keep this secret? I have no clue. And, you know, it was rumored to be so many different people. And then when he didn't show up, I was like, okay, whatever it is. But then you see the news report and you see the controversial news site, DailyBugle.com. And, I mean, it is just so insane. And he looked a lot more like his Spider-Man the Animated Series counterpart with his, you know, Blaze-like news program that's happening there. But, of course, he reveals that Mysterio's illusion, that Mysterio says that Spider-Man is from a different dimension and that Spider-Man killed him. And then, of course, Jonah revealing to the world that Spider-Man is, in fact, Peter Parker. Really nuts way to end the MCU there, the phase three of the MCU there. Craig, let's get your thoughts on this end credit scene.
Yeah, I loved every bit of it. You know, you had J. Alex Jonasson there, and
Alex Jonasson, nice.
You had
it was
really cool. It does a really good job of just getting you so amped for where the next story is going to go. And you know, there's been several iterations of Peter Parker as evil in the or the outlaw in the comic book series, because basically, if you're thinking about an equivalency to DC, in my mind, just based on Rogues Gallery and just amazing story, I almost put Spider-Man right there with Batman.
You would have
and
to.
So they both have these turns where they are the villain and everyone is coming after them. What's really cool and interesting is that we thought maybe the introduction of him in Civil War, they couldn't have revealed him to the world at that point, right? But that was such a big moment in that comic book series, was Peter Parker taking off his mask and saying, I'm going to sign up with Iron Man. I'm going to tell the world that I'm Peter Parker. That was such a huge deal. And now the fact that he's outed here in the MCU is just such – there's so many directions they can go with this. And again, you know, the mention of Sinister Six and his villains just keep going and going and going. But sometimes the best villains can just be society, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that he's going to be on the run in the next movie, we could get some really cool stuff going on.
Yeah. Connor, what'd you think of this?
100% honestly, I loved it so much that I almost started freaking out in the theater. But
I did too, man. I did too.
J.K. Simmons coming back after all this time to play J. Jonah Jameson was perfect, because who else could you have gotten to play that character?
Absolutely no one.
And
does this mean his turn as Commissioner Gordon is over?
Oh, man.
Sorry.
R.I.P.
And also, I loved how one thing I caught on to was how I love how more modern day it was, because it's not like back in the Tobey Maguire movies, they whenever that he was there, then they had him as they had him with the newspaper, and he was like big with the newspaper because everybody was reading the newspaper. Kind of now they put him in the actual news, and it's kind of more recent, I guess. Craig, I think I said was the wrong thing.
No, it's fine. It's just like, oh man, back in 2001, it was so long ago. It was so old. People were reading newspapers.
People were reading papers for news.
What is a newspaper? Are you kidding me? Oh my goodness. It's just so hilarious. Everything that just happened killed my soul a little bit, and I realized how old I really am. So thank you, Connor, for that.
I thought that Scott was the only one who was going to make fun of me.
Oh no.
No, but you're right. I'll just echo you. It's just like you look back at J.K. Simmons in those Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. He is the standout every single scene he's in. I mean, just the way he has that matter of fact way of speaking. I mean, every time they're just like, oh, who's going to be the new J. Jonah Jameson and stuff, I was just like, no, we have the perfect one. Like, damn it, I want him back. And just to Marvel, just thank you. Thank you very much, because they pulled the wool completely over my eyes there. I think the last thing I was expecting to see, like, because when they said, you know, like dailybugle.com, I was like, oh, I'm going to get to see who's playing J. Jonah Jameson. And then his face pops up and I'm like, no freaking way. Like, this is the best moment ever. But obviously, Craig, you already talked about the implications of him being outed, and you're right. This is just a pipe bomb into it, but it also tracks with what Marvel has done. You know, they haven't been big on secret identities. They haven't really kept anybody's identity secret at all in the MCU. And I think Peter was the last one. So now that you do that, it tracks with what they're doing. And you're right. You can take it in so many different directions now. But obviously there was one more post-credit scene where we find out that Nick Fury and Mariah Hill in this whole movie have actually been Skrulls in disguise. Talos, played by Ben Mendelsohn, and his wife from Captain Marvel. We don't know exactly what they've been doing for the last 20 plus years, but now they are here on Earth impersonating Fury, and they give Nick a call to tell him a progress report and such. And Nick Fury is, of course, on a spaceship somewhere, preparing for something huge here.
This is where we might need to do a drop in for Scott, because he was exhausted tonight, so he couldn't join us. But he shot back at me saying, "Nick Fury has been a Skrull the whole time."
Really, might have been.
That's what I thought.
So, you know, I think that there's something to be said there. I get the vibe that where the MCU is going to be, there's a storyline called Annihilation in comics. It was pretty popular.
It had to deal with
a lot of the, on some level, the Eternals were involved. Silver Surfer was involved. The Guardians of the Galaxy, the Asgardians of the Galaxy now. You know, all of these characters, these cosmic characters were kind of all put together in this series. And so I really think that could be our next major event. And in talking to Scott a little bit offline, I said, you know, I hope that they don't rush into that, because I don't need another major end game style event here in the next 3 years, 4 years, maybe 5 years. I maybe need it. You know, I mean, if we're going to keep this thing going, because God, why not? I would love it, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years from now to get that next big major event motion picture. So, but yeah, I think it's cool. It really settles some things up. It could also just be a fun nod. It could really not have too much of any payoff, but I doubt that. I think that Kevin Feige is very particular with how he does these things. One last thing I want to get in there about the both end credit scenes. I was so glad that they weren't comical and they weren't just throwaway end credit scenes, because we've gotten that so often now where we just get, and I get it. I like Howard the Duck, but
patience,
like, come
man.
On.
Patience.
And then, the shawarma, the PSA
Which was the
from
first
Captain
one,
America,
so I mean, you know,
the PSA from Captain America.
Yeah. Like, from Homecoming.
All of these end credit scenes where I'm just like, guys, this is, come on. Like, I get that you understand that we are all going to wait here for this, but give us some payoff. And this time they gave us not only one major payoff, but a second major payoff. So kudos to them, and grateful for both of these. We probably could have done a whole podcast on these two end credit scenes.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I'll just say this, you know, what you're saying tracks. You know, obviously The Eternals is a movie that they are actively developing, you know, and they've got a huge cast already supposedly announced for it. But I think you're right that Marvel, I think the future of Marvel and the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now is that cosmic side. And the fact that the Guardians movies have been as successful as they are, the fact that, you know, we've gone to some space lengths here with the last Avengers movies, and that those have been so receptive to that, I think that we are going cosmic. And I think that that's the only way to go, because we have sort of exhausted the Earthbound adventures for now in terms of what the Avenger-level movies are going to be. So I totally agree with you, and I think I am right there with you on the Annihilation line. I think that that is a perfect, fantastic way there. I know a lot of people want Galactus, and look, I love Galactus, but you know, I think that you can still save that a little bit. You know, you can still, you don't have to go with your big guns right out of the gate. I'm looking at phases 5 and 6. Okay. That's what I want. I think that you're right on there. And who knows, Nick Fury might've been a Skrull all this time. You never know. Connor, real quick, what did you think of this final end credit scene before we wrap up?
Final end credit scene, for a second, I actually did think what Scott said, and I actually for a split second thought, was he, like, throughout the entire post credit scene where he was given the status report, I was thinking, wait a minute, could he have been the Skrull the whole time? Maybe that explains why he didn't call Captain Marvel, because like they didn't want to bother her because she's kind of like their savior.
Yeah, and I love that he says, like, when Peter says that to Fury, he says, don't invoke her name. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, you could tell that, I mean, obviously you couldn't tell that they were Skrulls the entire time. I mean, that was just mind boggling how that just tricked you like that. But then once looking back on it, I'm thinking it makes sense because Nick Fury, we all know Nick Fury. He is not that trusting. I mean, I don't think he would trust Mysterio that fast, especially a guy named Mysterio. I don't think he would trust him that much, but I feel like that. After you think about it for a second, it kind of makes sense, but you do remember the shock that it left for you in the theater, which I definitely felt 100%.
Yeah.
But I loved it.
Definitely. So you're right, though, Craig. The end credit scenes of consequence. I mean, like, even that second one had a pretty hard comic edge to it until the very end. But I think you're absolutely right. Fury is out there preparing for some kind of huge cosmic threat that, you know, probably won't endanger the Earth so much in the sense of, you know, it might endanger the whole universe and such, but I like the idea of going out more into the cosmic realm. All right, so this is full disclosure. It's time for our rankings. We go 1 through 10. Connor, I'm going to start with you. What is your ranking of Spider-Man Far From Home 1 to 10?
I would probably have to give it an 8 because It's definitely, in my opinion, out of the two Spider-Man movies that the MCU has made, this one by far trumps it. And obviously, it's not the best Marvel movie because, you know, Endgame. And it's going to be hard to... And the whole thing about this movie was the biggest problem about it was probably the fact that the hype from Endgame and the excitement from Endgame and everybody highly anticipating it, all of that. I don't know if Spider-Man could have... How do I say this? If Spider-Man could have lived up to that expectation of being just as good. But then again, it was very fun, very enjoyable. The cast did an amazing job. They casted some great people, especially at the end. And I think that it was all in all a very great movie. And if this is the way they're going with Peter Parker and Spider-Man, I 100% stand by it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll echo you. I'll go a little higher. I'll go with an 8.5 just because I had such a high enjoyable factor for this movie. I just love this version of Peter Parker. I love this version of this character and how we're finally getting that high school side. You know, I know Tobey Maguire started in high school, but okay. Joe Manganiello was there. I was like, yeah, every high school had a guy that looked like Joe Manganiello. Sure. But yeah, I just think that this is a great continuation. And, you know, as Feige said, if this is the end cap on phase 3, I think it's a good one. You know, it is a way to kind of cleanse the palate a little bit, kind of how Ant-Man and the Wasp did for Infinity War. And, you know, just kind of get you back into remembering that the MCU is fun. And, you know, it's a place where you can laugh and it's a place where you can cry and have all these different emotions and also be insanely thrilled and continue to look forward to the next grand adventure. So that's where I come down on that. Craig, what about you?
You know, I would give it like 16 web slingers. you know, I don't like to give my 1 through 10s here, Jeremy, because I give them all such high marks, and then I'm called such a fanboy. But
how are we going to keep records enjoy, of your stuff, man?
You can enjoy movies equally as another. I mean, is this the masterpiece that Endgame was? No. Do I like this better than Homecoming? Hot take, I do like it better than Homecoming.
It's
I like
close
Michael
for me.
Keaton,
it's close.
But I do like it better than Homecoming. I really enjoyed this stuff. And just I'm so excited to see what's coming next. And so I know we're going to start getting into our plugs here. But we have a Hall H panel coming up from Marvel Studios in the very near future. And so likely we will be doing some reactions to that. Also, we have Brett, who is on on Beyond the Mouse with me, he is heading out to D23 in Anaheim. And so any additional Marvel news, I would assume that because they're doing the Hall H panel at Comic-Con, that the Marvel stuff will be announced primarily there. And then that kind of saves room for them to not have to address the Marvel stuff as much when they get to D23, because they have some other properties to contend with. I don't know if you knew this. This Disney company is really coming along.
I think they're going places, man.
So watch out for our reactions to that. Maybe they'll tell us what the next big event is. But if I had to predict what the Hall H panel is going to be, it is going to be talking much more about individual films than it would be a major through line.
Yeah,
that's just my guess.
So you're not thinking that we're getting like an El Capitan presentation here, mapping everything out?
I think when you go back and watch Kevin Feige's interviews since then, I think he was kind of pressured into doing that to release their whole slate. and I think that he regrets it because, you know, Inhumans never happened.
Well, it did. It was just not what we wanted or thought.
Yeah, right. You know, so there's I would be shocked if that was the case at Hall H. I would be shocked.
Well, I definitely hope we get some Black Widow stuff since that's filming right now. Maybe some good casting announcements and maybe a few. I mean, look, they just acquired all the Fox properties too. We've got Fantastic Four and X-Men characters back. So, I mean, lots of stuff that you could be announcing there. All right, folks. Well, that is going to bring us to the end here of this full disclosure on Spider-Man Far From Home. As Craig said, it is plug time. Of course, if you want to find more from the Front Row Network, you can find us on frnpod.com. Some amazing, amazing articles going up on that page right now. We just released one. Phil Rockwell, the host of Pop Culture Draft Night, did his top DLC characters for Mortal Kombat 11. It is a wonderful read. We got a lot of great articles in there, especially Lou Hare's article about why 1994 was the best movie year ever. And of course, just a ton of podcasts coming out this month. If you want to find us on social media, Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and of course, Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter. If you want to find me and my personal musings, I am at JGeck, JGOECK on Twitter. Craig, where are you at on Twitter?
I think I'm at Craig McFarland because I didn't know how usernames worked.
The original.
The original. There's like an illustrator named Craig McFarland Brown. Who probably hates me.
So everyone go to Craig McFarland Brown and tell him what you think of Craig McFarland's thoughts here. Connor, where can people find you online and your podcast?
My podcast is the Doghouse Podcast. You can find that on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, and I'm not going to name all of them, but there are a bunch of different platforms you can find me. Just look up the Doghouse Podcast or Condog Z and you can find me. And on Instagram, I'm con_DAWG_Z_YT. That's can find me on Instagram. That's a long username.
That's five more underscores than are allowed.
That's like a Flash Thompson name right there.
I spent my whole life making these videos for people.
Weren't you a little heartbroken when they get to the airport and he's like, oh, mom couldn't make it? I was like, damn you, Marvel. No, don't make me feel for this kid. All right,
our first movie without a Stan cameo. Just know, Stan, you're in our hearts. You're in our hearts and in our minds.
Yep. Love you, Stan.
Stan forever.
By the way, I forgot to mention one last plug. I'm sorry. On YouTube, I'm Condogz, which is spelled CONDAWGZ, and I basically make music, and that's pretty much all I do right now, but that's just my last plug. All right.
Hey, man, music
you
is
missed,
good.
You missed like six all underscores right there. It's con underscore dog underscore Z underscore hashtag.
All right, folks, we're clearly getting a little loopy here, so it is time to sign off here. Oh, and of course, if you want to find us on nprillinois.org, go ahead and do that. We are, of course, an NPR podcast.
We're on the homepage.
Yeah, we're on the homepage now. Go and check us out under the Community Voices tab. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Full Disclosure. For the Front Row Network, I'm Jeremy Gechner.
I'm Craig McFarland.
And I'm Connor Maloney.
Yes. And as always, we will see you in the front row.
Pew, pew, pew. Peace.